This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his home is Randy Dixon with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Each of these past Mondays during the pandemic, Randy has joined me on the phone and shared some archives from the Pryor Center. These are archives that originated from KATV in Little Rock. They're being digitized, and many of them can already be found on the Pryor Center website. Randy, thanks again for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's nice to be on again. Thanks for having me.
All right. So what have you dipped into this time that we can relive a bit of history?
This time it's a little bit personal. I started at KATV in Little Rock when I was 19, and early in my career when I was a photographer, in September of 1980, there was an incident in Damascus, Arkansas. And I was working nights with a reporter named Frank Thomas, and we were called out on a story for a fuel leak at a missile silo right outside of Damascus. Apparently an airman who was doing maintenance had dropped a ratchet that fell down the silo and pierced the side of the missile, and there was a fuel leak. And that's how it all started. That was early in the evening, and so we drove up, and Damascus is right outside of Conway, so we were only about 30, 45 minutes away. And we got up there and shot our story, and it didn't seem like that big of a deal. They had they had evacuated some of the residents, and they had roadblocks up, and we kind of shot our story, and Jim Pitcock, our news director, decided that we needed to come back because we had material, and Good Morning America, ABC, wanted a story. So Frank Thomas was going to do a story, and we were replaced by another crew. And so we came back to the station thinking that what our story was a fuel leak.
Okay.
That wasn't necessarily the case.
Okay, let me stop you right there, because you said that you didn't think it was that big a deal, but it was still a big story. You were sent out there late at night, there were roadblocks, some evacuations, so there was some idea that, okay, there's a bit of change of routine here.
Well, sure. I mean, it was a news story, but we were used to covering, things out of the ordinary, and we didn't know it was going to be a disaster, which it ended up being a few hours later.
Okay, so let's move forward. So what happened?
Yeah, so we come back to the newsroom. We get back about midnight. The other crew, Randy Weber and Jim Casey, and I think Dale Carpenter.
Yes,
who just retired from the university as a journalism professor. He was up there as our replacement. And we're in the newsroom, and I'm editing the story that we're going to send by satellite to New York for Good Morning America. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, there were no cell phones, we hear some screaming on the two-way radio, and it's Randy Weber. And he said I'm not going to use the exact quote, but he said it blew up.
Oh, my.
And they were basically, fleeing the explosion. And so I hate to say this, but the first thing I thought was, I don't have to finish this story because it's obviously changed. And we decided to immediately go on the air, and we, went on the air, and Frank Thomas, was anchoring, and I was producing from upstairs, and, we started doing live reports.
The Titan II missile silo this morning exploded. at approximately 3 a.m. Now, it developed a fuel leak last night at about 9. The fuel leak, undetermined origin, exactly what went wrong or why it happened. The maintenance crew there was evacuated. There were some injuries. At least 10 people were injured, and they were taken to the Conway Hospital. And the extent of the injuries is not yet clear. We will be back with more after this.
Live television as something quite dramatic is unfolding, and, you know, you don't know all the details yet.
Oh, we had no idea. I mean, it was chaos. It really was. And, you know, we stayed on the air all morning. You know, suddenly the newsroom was full of people. ABC happened to be in the state because Walter Mondale was in Hot Springs, and they were covering his visit, and they all came up. And so it continued to be, you know, a major, of course, story, but we stayed on the air, and Frank would keep coming in when we would gather information.
I have just been advised that a high Pentagon official has confirmed that there indeed was a nuclear warhead on board the Titan II missile, which exploded 1 mile north of Damascus early this morning. However, that same official also advises that there is no immediate danger, that the area where the radioactive device is located is built to withstand an explosion. And that there was one on board, and as Governor Clinton had inferred earlier in the day in a live interview here with us, that there was a nuclear warhead on board, and their concern at this point is the jarring of that nuclear warhead and the possibility of any seepage or radioactive leakage. Once again, early this morning, in case you had not heard.
What do you remember? Did you have a time? Because the information is coming in so fast, Randy, and it's changing, and there's so much you don't know, so many details not yet known. Do you remember if you had a chance to think about the potential of what was happening with a nuclear warhead possibly being in play here?
Well, no. I mean, we're talking about a 9-megaton nuclear warhead that was, you know, the most powerful weapon in the U.S. arsenal, and we didn't know what had happened. Mm. You know, the military was not saying whether there was even a warhead on it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what happened was it was 3 times more powerful than all the bombs that were used by all the armies in World War II, including the nuclear bombs. So if that would have gone off, Central Arkansas, most of Arkansas, would pretty much be gone.
Mm. Okay, now you mentioned ABC was already in the state. They end up getting some footage?
Well, the next morning, the airspace was closed.
Understandably.
Somehow they got a helicopter up and got amazing photos of what we called in the newsroom the smoking hole, because, I mean, it was just a giant crater in the ground with smoke coming out, and you could see people just, you know, military folks just standing around looking down, trying to figure out what to do. But they got that footage, and then, you know, of course, Channel 7 KATV was working to put material together. And that evening we did a special report recapping the events of the day, and I have a clip with Steve Barnes and Amy Oliver.
A new Scene Nightline special with Steve Barnes and Amy Oliver.
Good evening, everyone. The savage explosion at the Damascus missile silo has produced its first casualty. Air Force Sergeant David Livingston died a few minutes after 5 o'clock this afternoon at Little Rocks Baptist Medical Center, where he had been taken shortly after the silo erupted, although officials did not confirm Sergeant Livingston's death until just a few moments ago in the interest of notifying next of kin.
The eruption shattered a 750-ton steel and concrete lid on the missile silo and injured 21 other Air Force personnel. Steve reports that although residents have been allowed to return home, the debate about their safety will continue for weeks.
It was quite a news event. And that was my first year at Channel 7. So I had a heck of a year there.
And, you know, it's interesting because this almost coincides with the beginning of the 24-hour news cycle, because CNN just started their operations June of that year, just a couple of months before this happened.
Right. Well, I spent, 3 days on the side of a rural highway in front of this entrance waiting for the warhead to come out. And up pulls this 18-wheeler flatbed with this giant satellite dish on it. And everyone was amazed. And it was CNN. They had just gone on the air, and they had a correspondent named Jim Mikleshevsky who was there. And, of course, ABC and NBC and CBS News crews were all there. And they thought it was kind of funny that he would have to do a live shot every 30 minutes. He's working too hard. But, you know, that was things to come.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was the beginning of CNN. That was one of the first big stories they covered.
There was also, didn't something that you and your colleagues did at KATV change?
Okay. Yeah, this is something that it gets even crazier. I was associate, along with a photographer, I was associate producer on the weekend news with Frank Thomas, who was the anchor and producer. And the following Saturday, I'm sitting on the assignment desk and the phone rings. And there's this strange sounding guy that says that he's an avid scanner listener, and he has a recording we might be interested in. And I said, you know, what's that? And he said, well, he was really, really nervous, and said he had recorded audio of the Air Force frequency the night that it happened, you know, a few days ago. And was wondering if we would be interested in it. And I said, well, of course we would. And he had me meet him at a cafe outside of Little Rock. And it was very cloak and dagger.
Yeah.
He came in and wouldn't identify himself, didn't say a word, but had a cassette tape in an envelope and passed it to me. And I took it and we came back to the station, and it was pretty amazing stuff that we got.
Scene commander, command post.
Go ahead, please.
Additional information, if you have a reading of 0.5, you have to turn back, sir.
That's affirmative.
Command post clear. Sir, could you give us a status on those EOD and disaster preparedness people?
Still walking up the hill. And the latest report was no readings.
Roger, sir. Could you tell me approximately how far they are away from the complex?
At the cattle guard, no readings.
Roger, sir. Thank you.
Roger, on scene commander. The team went to the unit. They now they're on their way out to give a full report.
Scene commander, command post. What unit are you talking about, sir?
Let's not talk about that.
Feature traffic, please.
Say, let's don't talk about that.
That's a roger, sir.
I wish I had something secure, but right now our people tell us that a forklift can go in and do its job and return and without any difficulty. And that's the EOD people talking. And it's laying in a ditch. Side, you know, it's not even up close. It blew it out and it's laying in the ditch. It's all exposed, and so all they need to do is go and get it.
Okay, I'd recommend we wait for those people that are going to arrive in about an hour.
Fine with me.
Do you have any further status reports on that five-man team, sir?
They're back here. They've debriefed us, and we're just now standing by. And they've located what they want to locate. And right now, where it's laying out there, we're just concerned about the airplane flying over taking pictures. Should we go cover it with a tarp?
And first, we should point out that there were hobbyists who did this. They listened to scanners. I mean, they wouldn't watch television or read or whatever. Their hobby was listening to scanners for emergency,
right,
police or whatever.
And radios, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
All right. So he's got this tape. He brings it to you, and y'all put it on the air?
Yes. And I think there has been some sort of FCC regulations since then, but I'm not positive what they are. I asked Jim Pitcock, and he said, I'm not sure. But, it was a pretty big deal. ABC didn't even use it. But we ran 7.5 minutes of it. It was so compelling that on our evening news, we ran the entire edited clip.
So this in 1980, your evening newscast was still 30 minutes, right?
Yes.
So a third of your newscast that night.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, it was that big. And probably most of our newscast for a couple of weeks was all about Damascus.
As you mentioned that you're spending much of the newscast for a couple of weeks, how does this story evolve over the next few weeks, months, maybe even years?
Well, we kept doing follow-ups and, seeing what, was happening with the system. And, and eventually, a couple of years later, they started deactivating all of the silos. I mean, there were 18 of them in Arkansas, but they were scattered all over the country. And I believe they started deactivating them in Arizona. But we have a report from Bob Steele when they first started the deactivation, and that was in 1982.
The Air Force announced today that the Titan II missile wing at Davis-Montham Air Force Base in Arizona will be the first to go. The date for dismantling the Titans there isn't clear. The Air Force would only say it would be late this calendar year. A congressional source said today the best available guess is that the Titans in Arizona would be deactivated beginning in October or November. The Air Force says the Titans would be removed at the rate of one per month once the dismantling begins.
Did over time, over the next few months or so, did you hear from people that lived there or lived in central Arkansas that were, worried about what was there?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
There's a guy, Sid King, who ran a radio station in that area who covered it a lot. And, yeah, he and I talked about it for a long time about, this is kind of scary that these things are here.
Hmm. How are you going to top this one? This this is amazing stuff.
Like I say, I'm working on it.
So all sorts of Arkansas history is available at the website for the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Just Google Pryor Center and you'll come across it.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'll see you next week.
All right. I appreciate it. Keep them coming, Randy. Keep them coming.